We are seeking fertile minds where the seeds of voluntarism and non-aggression may be planted in hopes of cultivating the next crop of free-thinking and freedom-loving individuals. This is the Seeds of Liberty podcast with Danilo, Dave, and Jeremy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Seeds of Liberty podcast, episode 12. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter on theseedsofliberty.com. So today we have Cynthia Wells, anarchist. She's a manager of New Gateway Voluntarist and Anarchist Facebook page. And today we're going to talk about what it's like being a black anarchist and maybe perhaps get into a little bit of the drug war. And her views on that. So Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for coming on. So can you? Why don't we start with how you became an anarchist? It's good just to get some background.
Okay. I have a friend who was talking to me a little bit about government here and there, and he never really elaborated on his views on government. But one day he asked me, "Was I free?" And I was like, well, yeah, of course. I live in America. Of course I'm free. And he was like, no, really. Are you free? And I was like, well, I mean, I guess. He said, can you get married to whoever you want? And I was like, well, you know, the whole gay marriage thing. And he was like, what happens if you grow weed? I was like, you go to jail. He was like, so again, how free are you? And so he said, look, when people hear the word anarchism and anarchy, they automatically think chaos and there's going to be, you know, the purge, stuff like that happening. But actually, you know, I've gotten a lot of peace out of anarchy because, you know, it's me governing myself and making more decisions for myself instead of having to think about, oh, is this legal instead of is this right? You know, so my friend told me, he was like, you're an anarchist. You just don't know it. He says everyone is an anarchist, but they don't know what they are yet. I was like, okay. He said, well, just think about it. You know, when you're at home by yourself or when you're at home with your family or your friends, you know, is there a cop or someone sitting there telling you what you can and can't do? I was like, of course not. He was like, okay, well, you know, is there anyone telling you that you can and cannot smoke? You know, right now. And I was like, well, no. He was like, everybody's home is their own anarchy. They just don't know what it's called. So that's how I became an anarchist. It's been
that's
about a
awesome.
Year.
Any awesome. Any like books or personalities or people like podcasts that influence you?
Of course you guys. You know, I watch the yeah, you know, I mean,
yes,
you guys talking to you. I've been knowing you guys for almost a year now, and so after about a year of knowing you guys, I'm like, man, you know, this is amazing. I made a whole group of new friends and a whole group of friends that actually make sense. And if you guys think about what I'm saying, you know that having friends that make sense is really, really, really comforting, because most of our friends and family members don't make sense. And, you know, they're still stuck in that status box, you know, that you have to have somebody there to tell you that you can't do this or you can't do that. You're not supposed to rape. You're not supposed to murder. It's like, yeah, that's already a given. And anarchism is, you know, all the other stuff that you're supposed to be able to do without having restrictions and legislation and all this other bullshit tell you what to do. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
It is.
It's right that, you know, your home, you know, I mean, our personal lives are dominated by anarchy. That's the thing that most people need to understand. Most decisions in your life are not government approved or government regulated, right? They're dominated by your own conscience. But people don't tend to think of those things in terms of anarchy. It's like if the government were to try to regulate relationships in terms of who you can, you know, who you can be in a relationship with, like specifically, like you know, pair people together, people obviously would revolt. But when they regulate businesses, they're like, you know, yeah, that's okay, because because he might be evil, you know.
Yeah, you know, and people, anarchism isn't being accepted widely because it doesn't have some sort of religious backing to it. You know, you have the Democrats and, you know, their whole, they don't know if they're atheist Christians or just, I don't know. I don't even know what's wrong with those people. But then you have the conservatives and everybody knows they're Christian. You know, anarchism is you get to choose whatever you want. And it's up to you to make the correct decision for yourself. You know, you're not making it for somebody else. And that's what everybody's become so dependent on decisions being made for them that they've lost their instincts to make decisions for themselves. Like, since anarchism, you know, a lot of my senses have been picked up. I'm able to read people a little bit differently, you know. When you're not under that programming and everything, you start to see people in a whole new light.
Yeah, you do. You do. 100%. You see people. It's depressing.
It is. Because
they're in a cage, and they think that they're voluntarily in that cage, but they're not. And you realize that I'm in the cage as well, but I see the gun.
Yeah.
You don't. I'm trying to get you to see the gun. That's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
And you're getting mad at me because government has replaced God. What God has been used for, our religion has been used for in human society. Government replaced that when kings and clergy and all that went away. There's still some backwards ass society that lets God. Our religions are essentially the government. You know, you look at Iran, you look at, you know, Saudi Arabia, etc., etc. Those are still the government. But, you know, in the Western world, in the democracy world, whatever, the government is God. And so when you talk to these people that are still stuck in that paradigm, they fight back with religious fervor as if you just told someone that, you know, Buddha is the true God and your God is false. So they have this blowback and they just don't, they can't see past their indoctrination. And that's what I see people now for. I immediately pick up if they have if they can critically think. If you ask them a question, instead of giving some textbook answer that they learned and they've just decided that issue in their head is solved, resolved, file it in a cabinet because there's nothing else to learn about it. I'm looking for those people that when I ask them a question, they go, huh, I've never thought about that. I'm going to have to get back on you. And that's what you find more when you start talking to anarchists. You start talking to people who are digging into philosophy for sure. And it blows your mind kind of when you talk to people that just, it's like they just want to bury their head in the sand and they just, man, I'm all I'm worried about is my next beer, dude. It's like that's all they want to hear.
And it's really sad. And a lot of them, and what makes it even sadder is that it's people that are close to you. And you're like, look, the God that you're worshiping is not the God you think it is. You know, yes, you are worshiping God, gold, oil, and drugs. Because that is what people try to tell me that, oh yeah, you know, Christianity and you should do this and God, and you know, God tells us to listen to authority and God tells us to do this and everything and God tells us bigger, better, more and all this, and I'm like, your God is really greedy. Kind of like our government, you know. Yeah. I'm like, they haven't put together
self-obsessed,
that
self-obsessed, jealous.
Yeah.
Well, it's,
and they haven't put together that God is the same God that they're, you know, that they're being taught to worship. And see, here's where being black and anarchist comes into play. A lot of black people are religious. A lot of black people worship God, love God, and everything. And you know, you try to talk to black people about the government and God at the same time, and they think of it as two separate entities. But they don't realize that the God that they are worshiping, which I try to tell them all the time, I'm like, you know, the same God that you guys are praying to, worshiping, saying that's going to deliver you and save you and everything, do you not realize that this is the same God that was indoctrinated and ingrained and beaten into your people 400 years ago? You know, the same people that, you know, you're supposedly fighting against, the awful white people, you know, that are currently enslaving us, they're the ones that taught you this God, and yet you still hold on to the same ridiculous beliefs.
Man. I was talking to my brother, the youngest one, who is a staunch Christian, calls me every day, tells me I need to read about Jesus. And I asked him, I said, brother, if you were born in India instead of America or Britain or wherever else, if you were born in India, how could you tell me that you wouldn't be a Hindi and you wouldn't view Christianity as a false religion? And he said, well, I guess I couldn't. But eventually, hopefully, I would see the light of Jesus. And I'm like, do you not understand how ridiculous that you just sound? Like, it's what religion you are is largely based off your geographical, you know, where you're born. And, yeah, there are some cases where, like, a Jew converts to being a Muslim and a Muslim converts to being a Christian. Like, there's oddballs that happen, right?
Yeah.
People get swayed due to emotions and fear. But largely, you look at a map dissected by religion, and there's just huge big blots of one religion.
Yeah.
And you see that it's more of a consequence of what religion you were believe in than a you finding it on your own to be truth.
There you go. You know, and people don't realize, I'm like, you guys are taught this stuff. When have you really actually had time for self-discovery? You know, when have you actually really took time out of, you know, worshiping at a church or listening to the Osteens? Oh my God, I'm in Texas, y'all. And the Osteens are it. I am in Lakewood, Texas. I mean, it's in Houston. It's awful. I mean, traffic everywhere, horrible. Their God is terrible. Your God is bad. Yes, I am going to say it. Your God is the government. And well, government has tricked you into believing that it is this religion. And now you're celebrating on certain days. You're doing things on certain days. Certain days, this has to happen. Like, really, really, really think about it. Hump Day, Throwback Thursdays. I mean, this shit is being ingrained more and more into people. I mean, people are becoming more and more programmed, and the more programmed they become, the less they realize it. People think that this Orwellian, you know, it's going to be flying cars and shit. I'm like, no. You're already sitting here looking at a screen talking to somebody halfway across the country, halfway across the world. People talking to people in space. I mean, all kinds of stuff. But,
well,
you know,
another thing to talk about here is go up to the next time anybody that's hearing this, and I'd love to see Jeremy do this because this would be funny for him to record, is I would like to, next time you meet somebody that's staunch Christian, right, ask them what they would be more afraid of: cursing God, or using his name in vain, or breaking a commandment, or planning and running a cocaine factory out of their house. Which one do you actually fear more?
Planning and running a cocaine.
Exactly. So if the God that you believe in to be the ultimate authority in your life is superseded by another one, then he's not your God.
Yeah. I mean,
well, if
God exists and he can smite you down right now.
Yeah, he could.
Wouldn't that be a hell of a lot scarier, me just saying, God damn? I'm still here. Than me growing fucking 20,000 kilograms of cocaine in the, you know, some backwoods fucking house? Like, seriously. Like, what's more dangerous to my health?
Yeah.
Well, that's why I refer to the, you know, the status that, especially as you said earlier, Cynthia, you know, the Democrats, especially, a lot of them consider themselves atheists, but I refer to all of them as statheists because they are completely ensconced in the religion of government.
You know, a lot of people, it's funny, you know, especially a lot of the conservatives that I run into, they will still claim, you know, I mean, they would probably look at your little test there, Dave, and say it was silly because they don't want anything to do with cocaine anyway, so it has nothing to do with fear, and they would try to wriggle out of it that way.
No, no, no. If you want it to.
Well, okay. Well, that makes it different, I guess. But a lot of them still claim to have the higher, have their particular God as the higher authority, but they do still bow down, you know, even, you know, the Tea Party ones are the worst because they're the ones that claim to want freedom the most out of all of them, but they still bow down to the police and the military and, you know, we can't live without these things, you know, and that of course is the enforcement arm of the whole problem. So yeah, we want everything else to go away except the power for them to do whatever they want. Yeah, they can keep that. That's fine.
Yeah. But you know, the fact that they are so enslaved and that they're so close to me, and it's a lot, and it's honestly harder in the black community because I know a lot of white anarchists. I think me and maybe two or three other black anarchists are the only ones I know exist. I'm a fucking unicorn, you guys. Seriously.
If you were an ex-cop, it would be.
Actually, I went to a high school for law enforcement, criminal justice, and I went through the law enforcement program, but that's about as far as it got. I really wasn't a cop. That's when I knew that I was not going to be a police officer and that something was really going wrong here, because our training, you kick in a door, no matter what's going on, everybody goes and cuffs everybody to the ground. And you have to sort it out after that.
Yeah, so stupid.
Yeah.
It's like, we need to figure out everything, so let me handcuff everyone, sit you down and pepper spray you, and then we're going to figure this out.
I mean, they really honestly scare you into thinking that the citizens are against you. I remember being 17, 18 years old in high school, senior in high school, and we had this large projection screen. And we get this gun that's like an actual gun, but they've taken out the magazine and replaced it with the laser, so it's triggered to work with this projection screen. They had a fireback cannon that would shoot little marbles about that big of plastic, and you had to learn to take cover. I remember scaling the walls, all that shit, and thinking to myself, why am I writing these people tickets? Like, something's really wrong with this. I'm like, I'm not even helping anybody. Why am I arresting this lady? She's just upset. Like, I didn't feel like it was something really, really wrong. And that's when I knew I wasn't going to be a cop. But that's when I kind of started going, okay, maybe cops aren't the best at, you know, everything. And the more I grew up and the more I got arrested, you know, I learned how shitty the system can be. So
yes, those truly negative experiences will definitely help you along that path.
Yeah, they will. They will. And then, like, every time I got arrested, my training came back to me, and I was like, oh my God, you know, if I make a sudden move, he's going to take out his ass and break my wrist. Because we learned how to take suspects down. I'm 5'4", maybe 125, 130 pounds. You know, I had to learn how to take down big 6'2" guys and stuff like that. You know, they scare you into thinking that this world is this big, scary place and, you know, I always have to fear for my life. No, you don't need to be a cop if you're in constant fear for your fucking life. That is the opposite. You should not even be close to anyone if you are in constant fear for your life. Go be a farmer. Go live in nowhere. But, you know, they put these people out here and they tell them how scary we are and, you know, how we're all going to riot up against them and stuff like that. And it's not even the case. You know, we just want to be left alone.
You know, the really amusing part to me is when I learned that that police officers, there's like a ceiling to, you know, the IQ that they allow of people that enter the law enforcement. And to me, what that tells me is that, you know, we're really ruled by idiots, you know, by the stupid people. That's who they choose to enforce the law. Because if you were to actually put somebody in that position that is able to critically think like you and analyze the laws that you're supposed to enforce, you will quickly understand and come to the conclusion, you know what? I'm really increasing the evil in society and you know, destructiveness. I'm not decreasing any. I'm not saving anybody from crime. You know, I'm not helping people. I'm, you know, it's like I find it hard to believe that they drive around these cars with, you know, the protect and serve motto, and they never really think about it. Like, what? Years and years and years of working there, and you don't think that hiding in a bush, you know, with your you know, speeding what's it called, the radar gun?
Yeah.
and just flagging people, you don't think that that's immoral after years of doing it? Like, you really think you're helping people? Like, wow.
And I honestly, and
hey, tickets save lives, dude.
Yeah,
that's the stupidest shit I've ever heard in my life.
The commercials are so ridiculous. Oh, I just saved your life by writing you a $500 fucking ticket for not wearing your seatbelt. How did you just help me there, guy?
I just had that happen the other day. I may not have a place to live
because you took $500 that I was going to use to pay rent and stuff with. Thanks. You know, I mean.
And then this cop comes out the other day, this ex-police chief, and saying that every police department in the country has arrest quotas and ticket quotas. Every one of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you have an arrest quota? That means that the cop has to dig for things to arrest people for.
Yeah.
They have to lie. And it's so ridiculous. Like, that's not policing. That's domination.
It is policing. It's policy enforcing policing, you know? And I honestly would be okay with peace officers. And people want to say that how would, you know, private security work? We have a private security. We have a security guard in our neighborhood that drives around and patrols. The only reason the cops come and patrol our area is because they have to. If the cops didn't have to come, we just have that guy armed. He's fine. He does a great job. He doesn't bother anybody. He's not flashing his lights in people's eyes. He's not running up on cars and stuff like that saying, hey, you look too nice to be driving. You look too, you know, off to be driving a nice car like this. What are you doing? What are you doing in this neighborhood? You know, all kinds of shit. Just harassment. And you know what? It goes both ways. I've seen cops pull people over in my neighborhood and say, hey, what are you doing out here? Only reason why white people come out here is to buy drugs. What are you doing? Why are you over here? And it's like, I have friends that live down the street. Really?
That sounds too dangerous.
Yeah,
CJ.
I got pulled over.
I wouldn't trust any community that doesn't have a monopoly on violence. You know, fracturing people's arms and raping women, and you know, murdering people accidentally, shooting their dogs. You know, I don't think order can be achieved without those things, right?
I mean, you know, when people say that it's, you know, total anarchy, I don't understand why they refer to chaos. You know. Anarchy is the most peaceful, it's the most peaceful principle I've ever taken a part in. You know, I've been a part of religion, been a part of everything else. You know, this is pretty peaceful. It's just making decisions on your own constantly. You know, you're not having to say, hey, you know, can you please write a law for me because, you know, I need someone to tell me that I have to ride with my seatbelt on. If a person doesn't want to ride with their seatbelt on, that's the risk they take with their lives. We should not have to tell people, you know.
Well, you're not thinking about it through the fascist eyes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to think about that.
Jeremy, please tell, share your story.
Yeah, I had this happen the other day. A couple of days ago, Monday or Tuesday, I don't even remember now. I was on my way to work, and I did not have my seatbelt on, which I normally don't. Because yeah, exactly. I'm a hardened criminal, and I was driving along on the way to my first stop of the day, and all of a sudden, I saw lights come on behind me. And I looked down and I was like, you've got to be kidding me, because I knew I wasn't actually speeding for once. So the only thing I thought it could be, but that meant he had to actually spot me. So he pulled me over. And it's funny that you mentioned about you know, the saving lives and stuff, because I did get that speech from him, because he asked me, you know, he asked me for his for my license and my registration and my insurance card, and then said to me, oh, you didn't have that seatbelt on when I pulled you over, because as soon as I saw the lights on, I quite quickly, of course, slid it on.
Everybody. And,
I didn't say anything because I know enough.
You can go to court and fight it. He didn't have photographic evidence.
Well, of course, and that's the whole thing, because I didn't. I responded to him, but I didn't, you know, confirm what he said, because just like you were also saying before about how they, you know, you're trained to lie. You know, they're basically trained to lie.
They are
in order to get what they're after. So they want you to incriminate yourself. So, you know, of course, I didn't respond to that. I just said, oh, you know, I kind of mentioned that I was in a hurry to get to work, but for once, I had actually taken the key. I'd turned the car off and taken the keys out and thrown them on the dashboard and was being all law abiding and putting my hands on the, you know, which I never do, on the steering wheel. But I was very pleasant with him, and because of that, he actually got back to me with my ticket in under 2 minutes, which is like unheard of, because I'm usually there at least 20-30 minutes when this happens.
Yeah. At the end of the month, he's got to make a quota.
But he came back, and I asked him if he had a minute and he was willing to talk. So I decided to start asking him questions. And first, I went after the quota thing, and I started to say, because he said, you know, just so you know, it's click it or ticket week, so you might want to keep it on this week. And I said, you're serious, right? He goes, well, it is. And I said, and you don't think that equates to a quota system? Well, no, because it's, you know, it saves lives. And then he wanted to debate me on, you know, the numbers of how many people. I said, how many people actually fly out of their, you know, because the whole idea behind it originally was that people would get ejected from their cars in massive accidents and then hurt other people along the way. And yeah. He was literally like reading from, I mean, he was actually a very pleasant guy, one of the nicest character-wise, you know,
fascist
I've ever, you know, run into. He was very pleasant, very, very, very
most pleasant fascist I've ever met.
Yes. But he literally, it was like he was reading out of a playbook, because he gave me everything and he said, oh, it saves lives.
Did you ask him what would happen if you refused to pay the fine?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, he told me I was free to do all these things, because I asked him about authority and, you know, where he got this authority to do this and why it didn't. And he even, you know, he was another one. He admitted that there's lots of laws that he doesn't agree with, but then he fell right back onto the law is the law thing. And,
really?
Oh my God. But then he right away, before I could even get into that, he right away went into, well, you know, it's still the law and you have to follow it. If you want to change things, you know, go up to Albany and fight the legislators there. And I'm like, you honestly hear what you're saying, right? I'm like, you want me to all because I want to drive and assume a risk on my own. Cause that's what he asked me. What would happen, you know, if you fly out of the car and die? Well, then my family's on the hook, and it sucks for them, you know, for payment. If somebody, you know, it's like, and what I left him with, which is the one thing that I think finally caught him off guard, because everything I said to him, every question I asked, he just gave the canned answers of, you know, I don't write the laws, I just enforce them. I don't agree with all the laws, but they're
just kill the Jews. I just kick them into the mass graves.
Want to stump a black cop? Ask him if segregation was legal, would he enforce it?
See, ooh, you know what? It nice. Was a black cop, and I'm so mad we didn't have this conversation.
Wow. I got cussed out. Oh, my God.
I just left him with...
fugitive slave laws.
Well, any of those. Oh, any of the Jim Crow laws, you know. It's but the point was that he didn't... You know, he kept sidestepping everything, but then I finally left him with... you know, these, you know, pulling people over for stuff like a seatbelt, you know, you're basically saying it's because of what if could happen, right? And he said, well, yeah, you know, statistically, what if could happen that we need to have laws for that? I said, have you ever seen Minority Report? And he said, yeah, I love that movie. I said, can you please explain to me? Can you please explain to me how what you just said to me is any different than a thought crime? And he paused for a second and said, fuck.
Oh, you just made and him look, fart in his brain.
And look down and goes, I'm going to have to think about that one. And at that, I was like, you know
oh
what?
Oh, my God, you planted a seed.
A 10-minute conversation, I'm like, all right, I got to go anyway. So I said, listen, I don't want to take up any more. I was very pleasant, said, don't want to take up any more time. And then he stuck his hand out to shake my hand, which an officer.
And you didn't plug the podcast? What?
Yes, Dave, I shouted it as he was walking away. But you know, but like I said, it's just funny because like, they're in that mindset.
SeedsOfLiberty.com!
So,
oh my god!
So, but it's the whole idea of, you know, ticketing me for something that I could have done if I got into an accident, you know, on a road that was with a 35 mile an hour speed limit where I was only traveling about 37 to begin with. I'm like, if I got into an accident, would I be launched through my windshield and kill somebody? No. So it's what if, and that's what everybody's always so afraid of, the what if, and that's why.
Just following orders, man.
And the collective thinking. See, that's another thing that's rampant in the black community is we all feel like, you know, oh, we have to look out. I have to look out for somebody because they have the same care, you know, the same features as I do. No, I don't have to look out for anybody. I don't have to look out for you. I don't have to look out for the little kids on the porch and shit like that. I don't have to look out for the little rugrats and porch monkeys with diapers and shit like that. I don't have to look out for anybody but myself and my family. That's it. And I'm looking out for my community at the same time. But I don't have to take care of a bunch of people by force because, you know, I have to be a part of something. I don't have to be a part of this group. You know, I don't want to be a part of a group of people just because we have the same features and stuff like that. You could be a group of assholes and we all look alike, you know?
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they're really into this collective thinking that, you know, we all have to look out for each other and the white man's against us and everything. And my dad was talking to me about this the other day, and I told him, I was like, okay, think about this, Dad. I was like, you know, how many white people actually live in this neighborhood? He was like, maybe 5% of this neighborhood is white. You know, there's a few white people here. And I was like, you know, are they the ones dumping trash and leaving stuff hanging around the community? He's like, no, it's, you know, black people in our own community. And I was like, well, what about the stores and stuff like that? We have burglar bars on our stores and stuff. It's ridiculous. You know, they're store owners as well, you know, and you're trying to attack the stores in your own community. Well, we've gotten into this collective thinking, and our collective thinking is we all have to stick together no matter what, no matter if they're good or bad or whatever. We all have to believe in God. We all have to believe in the same God. We all have to think the same. We all have to look the same. We all have to act the same. But, you know, we really are all different, even though we have same characteristics and stuff like that. And you may not click with somebody with the same features as you. You might get along better with a group of people that are completely different from what you are. But this collective shit has got to stop. You know, I mean, it's got really, really, really bad.
I associate with the non-bearded all the time, and it goes against a lot of what I believe. And
I could be among you, but I choose not to.
Danilo, he gets a pass because of the soul patch, and then Jeremy...
Jeremy has an attempted beard.
I was thinking about making my own religion and following it with a state called Beardism, so I could never be forced to shave my beard for a job.
Oh my God.
That way I could be like, you're oppressing me. This goes against Beardo.
You have to have holidays.
Oh yeah, every Friday is a holiday.
Oh, see?
Stroke your beard day.
There you go again, Dave. Looking to use the violence of the state against people.
Hey man, everyone's doing it.
I can't grow a beard. So what am I supposed to do?
Buy one. Just tape it on.
See, another way to keep the black man out. Way to go, Dave.
Just grow a mustache. You're a woman.
Aw. See? And now you want to bring that up. Feminism.
It's kind of patriarchal, gender, I will admit. This church would only have a 100% male...
Oh, my God. I am confident feminist.
What are business? So you are openly discriminating against any bearded women out there?
No, I mean, if any bearded woman wants to join, that's fine with me. But fact is, most bearded women were just, you know, men.
Jeremy, I want to go back when you were talking about the seatbelt laws, because I think that's kind of in the same category as, like, drunk driving laws and, you know, speed limit laws. And And I got into conversation with you know, a few of my family members on this topic, and it's very interesting because, like, so you were saying it from the perspective of thought crime, but when I talk to people about this, I usually say, like, if I choose to drive without a seatbelt and it's dangerous, that's my personal decision. Now, if I don't care about death, if that doesn't frighten me, what makes you think that, you know, a fine or a piece of paper is going to prevent people from doing that if they don't even care about killing themselves? And the same thing goes with drunk driving. If people are idiots stupid enough to get behind the wheel while they're drunk, right? Or, I mean, I assume they should have friends that should prevent them from doing that. But if they're stupid enough to do that, then what do you think a law against drunk driving will do to, you know, to hinder them, right? It serves no useful purpose, but robbing people who are in their right mind and maybe had like one beer or something and they can drive fine, and they, you know, and robbing them will not improve societal, you know, welfare whatsoever. So that's my angle.
No, that makes sense. It's the balancing of the scales thing where they try to, you know, their defense will be that, well, yeah, okay, fine, those people you can't help no matter what. But all the other people, you know, like, sure, maybe some of them only had one, but there's plenty of others that get caught and you get them off the road and it lowers the chances of everything else. And it's still like, but you're still punishing people who haven't, other people who haven't done anything wrong with this giant net that's supposed to, you know, solve everything. And it's that mentality. It's the same thing behind the, you know, the gun legislation. Same thing.
Yeah,
you know, if we could just save one child, so we'll limit everybody else and the severely and, mentally challenged.
And see, that brings up a bigger point. You know, you have these gun laws and everything, right? And especially like up there in New York with the, you know, the Yankees and shit. But there are more people getting robbed. I promise you, there are not muggers down here in Texas running around snatching purses. Because grandma might pull out a pistol from her garter and bust you in your back, you know? Like, criminals don't care about the laws. So they're creating more criminals with regular people. You know, we're not the ones that need the gun laws and stuff like that. The criminals aren't going to care about obtaining a gun and shit like that. They're not going to say, oh, let me go get this registered before I go out and go rob this 7-Eleven. You know what I'm saying? You know, so all these laws have become obsolete because I'm like, you know, people are going to do what they want regardless. There are laws against drunk driving. There's still people that die from drunk driving. There's still people that get arrested from, you know, driving drunk. So having laws against said drunk driving and stuff like that isn't preventing anything. So
we'll get rid of murder. We'll just make it illegal.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you know, murders that okay way. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna tell people not to kill people. I'm like, but still people die and people are killing people, so what did you solve? Absolutely nothing. You know, it's everybody feels like the big the government can save them from some big boogeyman that's either gonna snatch them in the hell or come bomb them from overseas or something like that. Like, everybody thinks that something big and scary is going to come after them, and anarchism makes you realize there's no boogeyman. Okay, everything you do, everything everybody else does is a decision, and each decision they make, you know, has a consequence that follows it. If you make a stupid decision, bad shit's going to happen to you. Make good decisions, good things will happen to you.
I mean, this caveats directly into our second topic, I guess, for the drug war or the war on drugs, and how it's not only immoral, it's not legitimate at all, and it's a hopeless boondoggle that has really only done one thing. It's not stopped drug use, it's increased the power of the state to a further than an Orwellian dream. You know, before the drug war, you know, police officers, they didn't have to worry about the drug war. You know, they didn't have to worry about stopping all that. It was, they protect the, you know, I'm not giving cops a pass here because they still survive off of theft, but for the most part, they you know, protect the population. That was their job. Now it's, you know, the drug war and then all this other stuff getting, it just keeps adding up and adding up and adding up to where you might as well say cops are the military at this point, just enforcing politicians' will. They're not protecting anybody. You can't protect someone from themselves. Like, if I'm gonna get this knife right here and cut my fucking throat right now, I'm gonna do it. There's no amount of policing that can stop that. I mean, unless they lock me up in a loony bin, and then if I want to hurt myself, I'm still gonna find a way.
But Dave, suicide is illegal, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So illegal.
You're gonna go to jail. They're gonna handcuff you after you slit your throat, Dave.
The fact that it actually is in some places is so beyond ridiculous.
That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I was just reading something. I can't remember. I was reading some article the other day that happened to mention that, and I was like, I had forgotten about that fact. I'm like, yeah, there are places that it's illegal.
Just call the cops and pull a cell phone out of your pocket really quick when they get there. Like, yeah. I'm going to shoot you.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Suicide by cop.
Yes.
Yeah. It sucks. And people think that, oh, yeah, the police, they're going to protect everybody because, you know, people are suffering and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no. All this proactive policing is doing nothing but filling cages and keeping the perpetual slavery going. I mean, you know, people get thrown in prison over bags of weed. I mean, think about this. You have to find the weed man. Okay? The weed man doesn't seek you out. So.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Unless that's some proactive weed manery.
Yeah, you know, like, why is he being sent to prison and shit like that? Because everybody was out seeking him. He wasn't doing anything wrong. People came to him.
He was engaging in voluntary interactions, and that's
voluntary interaction.
That's a big no. Well, I mean, with the whole state's not getting a cut. Well, yeah, that's part of the problem, and you know.
And if they were getting a cut, it would be immoral.
I mean,
the only reason the drug war was approved and signed on by Richard Nixon and whatnot was he based it off of morals. We can't let this.
I'll tell you what Nixon's gonna do. He's gonna fix the morals of the USA.
Yeah, well, we've said it a bunch of times on this show. You can't legislate morality, and they just keep trying. I mean, the whole drug war thing. Obviously, it all started with the slippery slope argument of, you know, first it was cannabis where they demonized that. You know, basically because, you know, people like William Randolph Hearst, you know, the paper magnate back in the 30s and 40s, wanted to protect his industry from hemp and other people like him. And that's why it was originally going to be outlawed. And they made stuff like Reefer Madness and convinced all the people that, you know, marijuana was this horrible thing. They even came up with the name marijuana. I mean, most of the stories I've heard all go back to that being the name of a, you know, just a Mexican weed. They just pulled out of nowhere and to help with the demonization and coming up with all this. You know, wasn't it like they said that, you know, it was making blacks and Mexicans crazy and making them rape women and all that stuff.
No, it was the way they sold it on the first prohibition, or actually the. What it was is they taxed it, and the tax on it was so high that it would be impossible for you to buy it or sell it or make it, right? But the reason they passed that is they were saying that it was making white women have a propensity to want to engage in sexual activities with black men at a higher
rate. Yeah, they got hit with that long dong.
So the thing was, all of our white women are going to get high and have sex with black guys, and we're going to have a mixed race, and it's going to be the destruction of white America and religious fanaticism.
Yeah. So they shut that down, even though, you know, as we've also discussed before, you know, one minute it was perfectly legal and there was nothing wrong with it, and it was used as a medicine in so many different variations for a very long time. I mean, up until the point that they officially banned it, you know, it was still listed in the medical journals as a possible cure, or at least a help for like a myriad of different things, and you know, even cocaine, the same thing. It used to be used as a medicine, you know, for medicinal purposes.
Opium, all of that.
all of them, and it became the whole.
You can't put a patent on weed. That's why they.
But see, now
that's why,
like,
it's not legal. Honestly, that is.
Well, considering Monsanto has proven that you can now patent seeds, I think you actually can patent it at this point.
Well, of course,
GMO. Right?
Monsanto just made a GMO marijuana, so they're going to get the patent for it, and then I guarantee you, weed's going to be legal as soon as that happens.
Monsanto is the devil. No.
Well, I've always said even before I found voluntarism that, you know, the drugs would finally be legalized. Or at least marijuana, you know, cannabis at the very least would be legalized once the government figured out the right way to tax and regulate it, you know, that they could make the maximum amount of money. And you see that in the states that have now legalized it, you know, like
Colorado
and Washington, where they end up, you know, they're all touting all this money we're bringing in. It's like, yeah, you're ripping these people off. I mean, what's the rate in Colorado? I think it's like 25-30% they're taxing it. It's like insane.
Damn.
You know, it's like but you know, like I said, I thought that the whole time. Once they figured that out, well, we can make money off this. Well, then yeah, and we can regulate it, and we can steer the conversation back through the medical thing. I mean, that's the biggest joke of all. I mean, the FDA actually even said that the medical marijuana thing it does have medicinal purposes. Like they snuck that in a couple of years ago, and they're still acting like the federal law is supposed to be the highest in the land, even though their own organizations are saying, no, it has medicinal purposes. So that automatically takes it off the Schedule I platform.
Well, every time that there's, you know, an advocacy group tries to get the judges to reclassify it or whatnot, or open up the hearing for it to be reclassified, the judges just strike it down.
Well, of course, but they don't. But again, if everything that the hardcore constitutionalists want to believe is true about the Constitution and all these laws and the way everything is written, well, the fact that these organizations are already other organizations, and I think the CDC has actually also quietly said this too, that it has medicinal purposes, which that alone, based on all their other bullshit laws, means that it automatically should be taken.
If you're a hardcore constitutionalist, you shouldn't believe that the DEA, the FDA, or the any kind of A exists.
Yeah. Well, of course,
true.
To be consistent, but it just always blows my mind when you look at the top three anti-marijuana, anti-drug law, you know, lobbyist groups are the private prison owners, the cop unions, and the prison guard unions. Because they know the minute those go legal, their businesses go tits up. You're going to need less cops to protect the people from using these drugs. You're going to need less prison guards because 80% in some counties of their drug prison population is drug related.
That is weed.
You lose 80% of your prison population, that prison goes completely. You're going to be able to buy prisons at cut rate here, I would say, within the next 5 to 10 years. Maximum security prisons. You're going to be able to buy them and turn them into a paintball course. I guarantee you. And obviously the private prison owners, they get federal grant or federal no bid federal government contracts to prop up themselves, and the more prisoners they have in there, the better. So they want every law that they can possibly get on the book.
Yeah, I like to take the angle that we had prohibition, right, in the 20s, and everybody really understands that that was immoral. Like, how can you not let people smoke, or I cannot let people drink alcohol because they're going to make it in the black market, right? And that's how the mafia got started. and to illustrate the whole arbitrary nature of law, you know, I also say that 1932, alcohol was illegal and the ownership of gold was legal, right? Very next year, alcohol is legal, gold is illegal to own. And then, you know, and then people are like, well, but these prohibitions, they're the reflection of the people, right? Because the people, we are the government, right? The people influence the politicians pass the law, right? So it's the people's progression of their understanding of morality and ethics. You know, that's how people kind of try to illustrate it, because they don't seem to see the difference. Like, you know, we are government. It's like, no, when you get the, you know, the those lights in your rearview mirror as you're driving, do you say, oh no, that's just me, that's
right,
back there, that's just my friend, don't worry about him? I mean,
you don't even have to turn on the lights when he pull up behind you. You're like, oh shit,
yeah.
Please don't pull me over. You don't feel safe when you see a cop.
No.
You're like, shit, please don't hurt me. Please. I just want to make it another day. Please.
Just let me go home.
That's all I'm asking.
But yeah, that is funny. You know, people, the arbitration, the clear, how clearly arbitrary the laws are for drugs and pretty much any vice law is so ridiculous. Like what if a doctor wanted to prescribe alcohol to you? Hey, this might help your liver or your blood pressure. Drink a beer a day or something. They couldn't do that because the government would say no. You know, no, you can't, because it's bad.
You know, maybe my sister would be here if they weren't pumping rounds of fucking chemo into her while she was fighting for her life, trying to recover from an aneurysm. They ended up discovering that she had cancer. And so on top of her fighting for her life, you know, just having an aneurysm, she's trying to fight it. Her body's trying to recover from chemo. And the chemo is supposed to be helping. You know, maybe she would have got a cannabis treatment. Maybe she would have been here. I mean, this greater good shit has got to stop. And that's what everybody is. That's what it all boils down to, is everybody is like, oh, well, it's for the greater good. And you know, what about so-and-so's kid? And what about that's why they use statistics and stuff like that, because people are like, oh my God, that could be me. I could be another statistic, and this can happen to me, and I can go flying through a windshield, and I can go doing this, and I can go doing that.
Well, yeah, I could walk outside and get struck by lightning. Should we ban lightning?
Yeah, my daughter was like, Mom, everybody that's ever been to jail has breathed air. Should we ban air? I'm like, no. I said, you know, grown-ups don't even realize that shit. You.
What did that cop say the other day? 100% of all heroin users used milk.
Yeah.
We should ban milk. It's a gateway drug.
Right? You know, I'm like, you can't save everybody. And you're not supposed to.
Well, yeah, but that's what I was saying with the slippery slope argument before, about how they you know, oh, these horrible things could happen if you just let this, so we got to nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
And most people are blind to it because they just nod along and go, okay. And, you know, Danilo, what you were talking about with the, you know, the immorality and the morality of the law switching back and forth, you know, most people don't see the connection between the alcohol prohibition and the more extended and egregious cannabis prohibition because of the propaganda they've been fed their whole lives. You know, there's still people to this day that I meet, you know, usually in the older generation of the conservative parties that I come across, that still believe like reefer madness was for real. Like, they really believe, like, they still believe that hardcore ridiculous stuff that they were either force-fed as children or their parents were force-fed and then passed on to them. Like, they still honestly believe that because they've never bothered to try. And they, you know, the media and the bureaucrats are wonderful at cherry-picking the stories to put out to the public to say, well, this is the bad thing that could happen. And, you know, and like you said, Cynthia, it could happen to me. You know, the really weak-minded people will automatically panic and just say, oh, well, that could happen to me, so we must ban it, just as you said, for the greater good, because they don't make that connection to failed prohibitions and trying to do the same thing again, which also ties into what we were talking about earlier about, you know, how criminals don't obey the law. That's what makes them that's what makes them criminals. So they're not going to stop, and it's not people that weren't going to, wouldn't break an arbitrary law in the first place, are not going to be further protected from breaking said arbitrary law with the law in place. So it only leaves the people in the middle who may or may not do these horrible things that don't affect anybody else but themselves. Right. And they're the ones who get punished. They're the ones just trying to live their lives and just trying to get, you know, whatever it is. You know, whether it's they're in a rush and they don't want to wear their seatbelt, whether they just want to, at the end of the day, unwind with, instead of having a beer, like, is perfectly accepted. You know, they want to come home and light up a joint instead. You know, that's how they want to relax. But they're a horrible person because government has dictated that that is illegal. And they don't want to, you know, most people don't even want to question that. They just want to say, oh, well, where's the studies that say it's good? Well, government made it illegal. Nobody was allowed to study it for decades. But again, nice. pick up a medical book from the early 1900s, you know, and you'll see where all of these quote unquote illegal narcotics were used for a myriad of things to help cure and prevent and do all this stuff. And then all of a sudden one day, oh, nope, not anymore. Now we're going to make this schedule of drugs. And once you reach this certain plateau, you can't use it for any purpose. And it's just ridiculous, but people just don't want to see the connection. They look at the god of government and say, well, they take, like you were saying, Danilo, with the angle with the people, and, you know, we're the government and blah blah blah. Doesn't matter, whichever one they want to use, they will justify, well, it was made illegal for a reason, and then it was made legal again for a reason. And, you know, like I said, whether they think the people had something to do with that or whether they think that government is good and did it for the right reasons. It sorted itself out. So it hasn't sorted itself out now. It must not be time yet. It must not be ready. It's like, but if it happened tomorrow, what would you say? Like, that blows most of their minds. You know, most especially the conservatives that are so staunchly anti-drug. What would you do if it was legalized tomorrow? How would it affect your life? You know, and they don't want to answer that. They, you know, it's all...
It also goes down to the... like, if I walked outside and saw my neighbor smoking a bong on his front porch, would I feel justified going over there with a gun and saying, hey, I don't want you doing this on your property?
I mean...
If you're not willing to do that personally, yourself, if you would not do something, like, if there's a law on the books and you wouldn't feel comfortable doing it yourself, not comfortable, but justified in the right, doing it yourself... Where does someone else get the authority to do that? How do you give someone else that authority that you don't feel justified even using?
Yeah. I mean,
it's called magic. Booty.
Yeah, and they and they tell you, you know, yeah, they have the authority. And I'm like, where did they get it from? And why are they using their authority to tell me what I can and can't do with myself? You know, you're going to learn your limit with drugs or you're going to die, period. That's what you're going to learn. And what I've learned from drugs or watching people use drugs, people tend to kind of regulate themselves on it. You know, sometimes somebody can be productive and, you know, go about their day and everything, or sometimes they can be a bum. It just depends on that person, but you can't save everybody. And the fact that people use the government as some sort of fountain of youth to try to keep everybody alive longer and everything, no. Nature's supposed to sort shit out. The stupid people are going to touch the electrical boxes. The stupid people are going to do all kinds. They're going to drink the paint. They're going to eat the paint chips. Nature has a way of sorting shit out. Okay.
Stupidity is illegal.
Just remove the word. Stupidity is illegal in nature. Okay. That is nature's number one law. Don't be stupid. And you will make it out of this alive. I promise.
Sure. Sure. Just remove all the warning labels and let things sort themselves out.
I would like to know, honestly, here's another thing that I think just damns the whole argument. How many people have been adversely affected not by the drugs themselves, but by the drug laws? So I would just like to know a body count of how many people have actually died from marijuana use versus how many people have died due to the United States drug war. And we'd have to add up Mexico because they're adversely affected because they signed on to the, you know, the whole nation or the whole planet-wide ban on controlled substances, whatever. You'd have to look at all of Mexico, pretty much all of South America, lots of Canada, that people have risked growing weed there. How many people have died due to drug enforcement agents killing them or them dying in prison versus how many people have died using these drugs? I guarantee you it's a 90 to 10 ratio.
It really is.
Oh, yeah. Or probably higher.
You know, the cop told me, he was like, hey, I am saving your life right now. I was like, nigga, I'm in the back of a cop car. I'm about to lose my job over this. Oh, two joints, two little roaches this big. I'm about to lose everything over this. You know, I did. I ended up losing my job. I had to find another one. Thank God I found one the next day. You know, I was like, I am not. I told him, I was like, I'm not some bum out here. Everybody you arrested has a job. You know, we had shit to do tomorrow.
He was just filling his arrest quota, dude.
Yeah.
Just, that's it, really.
He had three in one night. I was like, well, congratulations. I hope you love that toaster that they give you guys at the end of the month when you make your quotas. Because
Well, there's federal drug enforcement, like, incentives, right? So if they arrest, like, 12 marijuana, if they have 12 drug arrests a month and convictions, they get more grants money and they get more funding from the federal government. So they have...
They got a whole new fleet of fucking 2015 Tahoes. So all white.
So there's no incentive for them to show any leniency in drugs because they're incentivized because it's a boondoggle. Oh, this is costing us this much to use to fight the war on drugs. And then they spend all this money outfitting all these local police departments and federal police departments and sheriff's offices and et cetera, et cetera. Oh, we spent this much money. We need this much more money next year. So, I mean...
And you know, what really, 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 really bothers me about the black community, and I don't even know why it does, but it does. They like to bring up Obama and weed and, you know, and one day Obama's going to make it legal and Obama's going to do this and Obama's the savior and Obama with the drug war. And you see he put a stop to it and everything. I'm like, guys, if he has the absolute power right now to make all drugs legal.
He does.
And you don't have to worry about it, you know. Why wouldn't he do it? I'm like, why are you guys depending on this one person to tell you what you can and cannot do with your own life? Who the fuck? Fuck Obama. Who is he? I don't know him. Okay? And I'm being honest. I don't know him. I don't know any of the pilgrims that are sitting in Washington, D.C., signing off legislations. I don't know these people. And I didn't sign any contract saying that they have some sort of authority over my life to send hired goons to kick in my door and arrest me over a plant. You're telling me that the God that you people are swearing to is wrong? So that God messed up when he made weed? That's how I get the Christians.
Yeah, I just want to go back to what Cynthia said before about the chemotherapy, because I think that's an excellent observation. First of all, I think it's important to clarify that what is banned are plants, and what is legal, prescription drugs, are like several times magnitude more dangerous than any plant substance, and many more people die of legal prescription drugs than have ever died from plants or mushrooms or anything that grows in the earth. Okay, so talking about chemotherapy, that is something that has really been a focus before I even got into voluntarism. I was big into, you know, learning about nutrition and Monsanto and GMOs and all that stuff, and then learning about the FDA and about you know, how it's illegal to treat cancer with anything other than chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. Right, those are the only three practices, medical treatments that are legal for cancer treatment. Everything else is harshly illegal, and it's just so amazing how these, you know, I've read about a bunch of them, like the Gerson therapy, like the SEAC therapy. There's like the hoxie there. This is like so many, and most of them are herbal, you know, in nature, or like raw organic fruit, vegetable juices, and things like that. But it's like people are more afraid to take a raw organic vegetable fruit juice than they are to inject themselves with chemotherapeutic agents, which are themselves carcinogenic, yeah, and kill people. And they would do it just because it's legal.
On top of that, think of the – it costs my mom – my mother had her – the doctor she worked for had some sort of kidney cancer. He can afford to pay $1,500 a month for one pill. Imagine somebody else like me or you having to pay $1,500 a month a pill. And then this pill is releasing poison into your veins. Yeah, and there is a guarantee that the cancer will come back, even if it does go into remission. It's never truly gone. And it's been proven over and over that even the ripe bananas help fight cancer. Even cannabis oil helps fight cancer. It's a lot of things that help fight cancer.
Vitamin
C. You can't use those. No, they want you to use this poison. My sister's hospital bill was $500,000. When they got done. She was in there for 30 days. Half racked up $500,000. They had 100 doctors. They flew a doctor in from Boston to diagnose the cancer that she had because none of the doctors had ever seen it, and they didn't know what it was. So they were like, okay, well, we're going to have to do extreme chemotherapy. And then from there, it just went downhill. You know, and then, I mean, I've seen more people die from chemotherapy than the actual cancer itself.
Yeah, there was a story of a... My mom was telling me one of her friends at church or something was like, I'm not getting chemo. I just want y'all to pray for me. The doctor said I have 6 months to live. And something killed him 10 years later after that.
Yeah.
He refused to do any chemo. It was like.
I knew people that.
And it wasn't even cancer related. It wasn't even cancer related. He had a, I think it was an aneurysm or a stroke. It killed him.
I knew a guy, he was lived to be about 80-some years old, and they told him that he had prostate cancer and that they were going to have to operate on him and everything and do chemotherapy, and he told them, I'm not doing any of that. He said, I'm going to continue to drink my olive oil and my liquor, and I'm going to go about my life. And he lived for years after that. He lived for years with that, doing that. You know?
Well, there is now more about prostate cancer. There is more facts coming out that if men could live indefinitely, they would eventually get prostate cancer. So what you have to do, what they do now is you can get an elective procedure when you're about 70, 68. Men usually get prostate cancer around that age, around 75, around 80. To go ahead and get it while you can still heal from the surgery, go ahead and get your prostate taken out so it doesn't give you any problems later in life.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole drug war is just so fascistic in nature, just due to how much it props up so many corporations, props up so much government programs. It's just such a ridiculous boondoggle. The addiction rate for hard drugs was 1% when they started the drug war in 1970, and it's still at 1% 35 years later, or 45 years later.
Yeah.
So
it's been generations of the drug war.
So we're seeing that no amount of government interjected because they've spent $1 trillion, and like $1 trillion is like if you had $1 bills, you could rebuild the Twin Towers with dollar bills. Like,
they've just been hemorrhaging money into this, and you know we're the ones that's paying for it, and people don't realize, you know, you're paying for this drug war that you're against. You're paying for people making their own decisions, you know.
Why can't government ever back out? Why can't they ever go, we're going to go bankrupt if we're doing this? And why can't they back out? I've never understood that about government. This thing is bad for our budget. Why can't we back out, guys? They can't do that. Because that would be it admitting we're wrong, and that would be shutting down some of their power.
Well, it's not part of the plan. The plan is always to expand, never to shrink. You know, that's evident by just looking at history and seeing every form of government. You know,
doesn't run a profit.
They always it's not their money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The people who end up in charge, especially in the modern day, with everybody, just about every nation state in the world under some kind of fiat system, it's number one, not their wealth. Number two, the money's fake, so they're just taking, and whatever money they take from the system, and then supposedly pay their fair share back into, is stolen from somebody else too, and they just take the fake money that they get their hands on first and turn it into real wealth, and everybody else just keeps getting poorer. So no, they don't want to pull back. That's not part of the plan. They need to keep pushing forward. You know, the whole drug war thing, obviously, yes, is silly, and it's going to keep going until enough people recognize it. But it's just like anything else. You know, the war on poverty, same statistics. You know, everything was on the decline until the war on poverty started, and then it started to creep back up again because they're not actually doing anything about it. They're not even trying to do anything about it. The goal is to convince people that they're doing something about it by saying that all this money is needed, and that to ease the pain of having to fork over more of the fruits of your labor in the form of, you know, extortion that they've labeled taxation. And you will keep believing that. And then, you know, that going back to what you said before, Dave, about, you know, the people not seeing the different possibilities here, and how, you know, chemos and radiation are the only options. Well, yeah, because the propaganda has taught everybody that the FDA, the USDA, the CDC, these are the authorities in these areas. So what they say is what everybody else should follow. And, you know, you follow
what the FDA or the CDC is saying is goes to the highest bidder.
Well, exactly. That's what I was going to get to. They, you know, of course, whoever wants to pay is going to get the regulations in their favor, and that's why chemo and radiation and those type of treatments are the only ones that are not just recommended anymore. That's the only option you have in most states, because it is illegal to use other options. I mean, the fact that certain states now are finally starting to pass laws to allow people in end-of-life scenarios to try different treatments is like that is patently absurd. The fact that you even have to explain that to people, like, people have to ask for permission when they have already been given a death sentence. And they are willing to grasp at any straw, spend whatever money they have personally made or friends are willing to give them or whatever. Like, they are willing to do whatever it takes to try something.
But here's the thing. Those cures are free.
Well, yeah, of course. That's why they want to keep it away from them.
You can grow your own cure.
But that's what I'm saying. The fact that people have to ask, like, the fact that this doesn't just ring in people's minds, that you have to ask permission to try to save your own life, yet in a lot of places it's illegal
you're
to
just
kill
not
yourself.
Thinking, like, you're just not seriously? Thinking about the greater good, Jeremy.
Yeah,
you're just really
what's
not,
wrong
man.
With you? What about
stop,
everybody?
What about
resist,
what about peace and love? Come on, dude.
Yeah.
You are messing up the kumbaya rainbow
yes.
here.
Hey, to each according to their ability, okay?
Well, it's a shame though, because like, you know, like I said, there's so many people that, you know, like you were saying, Cynthia, about your sister, like, you never know. Like, my uncle too. My uncle passed away from cancer, and he was somebody who would have been willing to try just about anything. You know, but here in New York it was illegal for him to do at the time, so he went through the chemo and the radiation, and it sapped the life out of him, and they thought for a while he was going to get better, and then they kept dosing him, and then he got even worse, and then he passed away. And it's like, you know, would it have saved him? I don't know. It's impossible to know, but it's also impossible to know when they don't even give you the opportunity to.
Yeah.
And to have to, you know, it's the drug law, the drug war in general is obviously, to people like us, is completely ridiculous, because you are attempting to legislate morality and tell people what they can and cannot put in their own body, whether it's for recreation, whether it's for medicinal purposes, whether it's to attempt to save your life. It doesn't matter. It's your body. Why does, like, the fact that anybody is that much of a busybody that they have to prevent others from dealing with their own?
Could it be that we're just state property, Jeremy?
Well, yeah, we are.
We are state property.
Yeah.
And actually, all of our names are in capital letters on our identifications. We're state property.
That kind of reminds me, I think it was George Washington that died because his doctor used bloodletting at the time, and he was getting weaker and weaker as he was progressively draining him of his blood. And the doctor's like, "Don't worry, we're almost cured. Let me just drain a little more blood," until he finally died. And that's the same thing with the chemotherapy. It's like you're getting progressively weaker. You know, a poor immune system, and the thing that usually kills them is the opportunistic infections, right? Not necessarily the cancer, or the treatment itself, right? The toxicity of the cancer of the chemotherapy agents.
It kills all the cells.
And they said, you know what? If only we had a little more time, we could have saved him.
And
it's the smart people that actually resist and say, you know what? I think you're killing me. I'm going to stop. And what's amazing is that the people that do the Gerson therapy, for example, like there they have their treatment facility in Mexico, and the people that they get there are like completely terminally ill, like end stage cancer, like the people that the physicians or the oncologists have told them, you know, there's nothing more I can do for you. Get your things in order, talk to your family and loved ones. This is the end, you know. And then they say, you know what? I don't accept this, and they find something else. And they go to Mexico, and they have like 80 to 90% success rate with these terminally ill patients, and then they go back to their oncologist. And they're like, look what happened. You said I was going to die, and you can't find the cancer anymore. And they're like, well, I don't know what you did, but it's good. I mean, it's like they don't even wonder, like, is something that I'm doing killing people?
You know? No, that one doctor got busted for giving chemo to people. He would fake that they had cancer because he had a chemo quota he had to make for his clinic.
That's awful.
And they sent him to jail, which, I mean, hooray, Mark went up for the state, but that's ridiculous. I mean, he was killing people, essentially.
How many people, you know, and how many
like
people
two or
did
300
he
people, 200 or 300 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They would come in. Oh, I got a lump on my neck. It would just be like some benign tumor or something. He'd be like, oh, you got cancer. We got to start chemo right away, because he was getting extra money from these chemo companies to sell their product. And
well,
what they sell is death.
Yeah, I mean, the same
doctors
thing with any physician.
Get that. Yeah, doctors do get incentives. I know a doctor, he got a trip for prescribing this antipsychotic to a certain amount of people. You know what I'm saying? And this is like in our neighborhoods and stuff, you know, like you're releasing this person into our neighborhood with this antipsychotic that they really don't need, and now it's actually made them psychotic. And so now the state gets involved again because somebody's running ass naked down the street with the broom, you know, saying they're Harry Potter. It's all of this could have been prevented, you know? I mean, the doctors are greedy. Everybody's all the legislation and everything, they're all cooped in together, and they're all very greedy. And they've convinced the masses that, you know, it's not greed. You know, we're looking out for you guys. You know, we want to make sure that you're okay. And it's like, you know, you've been dousing this you've been pumping this person with radiation and chemo and stuff like that for like 6 months, and they've done nothing but lost weight, hair, everything. They're dying at your mercy, and you will not change your regimen.
I don't know how a doctor sits down and sleeps at night. It's almost like, how does a soldier or a police officer, you know, when they go over and they're not defending their homeland, it's like...
But see, they don't sleep at night, and people don't know that. I mean, cops and everything, they're always offing themselves and shit like that, and they have drinking problems, pill-popping problems and stuff like that. They're cheaters. A friend of mine, you know, finds out her husband gave somebody else, because cops in Houston, or cops that I know of, They get free apartments here in Texas. You know, you get a free apartment even if you have a house.
Oh, that's not welfare.
let's say you're guarding, you're doing a watch over an apartment complex. You get a free apartment in that complex, no matter what. You know, they use it for their girlfriends and stuff like that.
Well, they're heroes. They deserve special perks.
Well, of course. You know, I mean, so, I can't go up to somebody and say that, oh my God, that's a tacky sweater, and write them a fine and everything. I don't get awards for that, but I should.
So, Cynthia, if you had to tell someone who was kind of teeter-tottering on anarchism, what would you say? What would you say, especially if they were, you know, black or whatever you want to call it?
Release the God. Release the gold, oil, and drugs that you've been indoctrinated to believe are, you know, your savior. It released the government that you think is going to save you from the end all be all. Release all of that. You need to start thinking for yourself. No one can save you but you. There's no law that can save you. You know, you have to start thinking for yourself. You all have to start doing for yourself. And when our society gets back to being self-sufficient, instead of being dependent on the government and dependent on religion and dependent on doctors and stuff like that, once we become self-reliant again, that's when peace will come. But until then, the tensions are going to continue to rise. Everyone's going to continue to be upset because everything's processed for you. Everything's programmed for you. And you all know that this programming is wrong. There's something inside of you telling you that something's not right. And you need to listen to that voice.
Yeah, it always cracks me up. They're like, oh, the black people down in the severe destitution areas of like Chicago, New York, whatever, Baltimore. The cops are killing us. They're beating us. They're racist. And then they go, okay, well, and the cops stop doing their job, which has happened in Baltimore recently. And they go, oh, we need the cops again. People are getting shot. It's like, how many of these people that just got shot over this Memorial Day weekend in Baltimore were gang members? Like, I would really like to know. I would bet a large majority of it. So they were going to die whether the cops were there or not.
You know, and people think that you don't need to have your life policed to live it safely. Just use common sense. I mean, people act like they have to be told what common sense is now, you know, what you should and should not do. People have lost their morality listening to laws, you know, trying to follow laws and everything. Everybody's lost their, a lot of people have lost their basic instinct. That's why there are labels on everything. I mean, you know, there's signs everywhere that says don't cross here, don't cross there. You have to go a certain speed or you have to do this in order for you to be safe. You don't need that.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting point that somebody was commenting on some of our posts, which was, you know, how the non-aggression principle is inefficient because what are the limits and who enforces it? You know, when do you determine that the non-aggression principle requires the use of defensive force? And what is defensive? You know, it's like this is the mentality of people wanting to be told what to do and wanting to be told what is right and what is wrong,
or
right?
They think the nap is a law.
Yeah.
Like it's called morality, and if you weren't taught morality as a child, that's quite unfortunate because it should be something that's inherent in every human being, you know. And if you really need laws, you know, just pieces of paper to tell you how you should treat your neighbor or your friend or your family, I think you have bigger problems in life than the non-aggression principle.
Right? If you have to have a gun to your head to tell you not to run over little kids while they're crossing the street for school,
it's the law.
Yeah, you know. You're a bad person. I'm like, if you need someone to hold you hostage to tell you to be a good person, you're a shitty person. You are a terrible person. There, I said it.
Well, I just look at it as, you know, when people say that, you know, there's these laws, there's got to be laws. You know, to what you were saying, Cynthia, I don't think I mean, I think there are some people that actually think there needs to be stuff to tell them what to do, but more often than not, at least what I come across is it's always the other guy. These laws need to be in place for the other guy, not me. I wouldn't do these things. I don't need that. But it's these other people, or you know, or if they want something banned or they want something outlawed or whatever it is, it's like, well, it's these other people that could use it, and you know, I'm a good person. I don't need that stuff. I try to ask them, well, if you feel so strongly, you know, to what Dave was saying earlier about, you know, if you feel so strongly that something needs to be changed, something needs to be banned, something needs to be curtailed, you know, if you're not going to use the gun yourself, then it is a cowardly action to have somebody else use the gun instead. But if it's a matter of having something taken away from other people, every time you get that urge, every time you say there or you think there ought to be a law or this thing needs to be banned or this is a bad thing and nobody should be allowed to have it, before you say those words out loud or before you start pressing the issue, try to put it on yourself. Think of something that you like. Think of something that you use on a regular basis. And imagine somebody saying the same thing to you. How would you feel? You know? And that's what a lot of people don't realize, because of that whole greater good phenomenon, they lose track of the fact that, you know, for, besides the fact that we're not actually free here, even though we're told we are, most of these people don't really understand what freedom is, because it's not just the freedom to do what you want, it's also allowing others the same exact freedoms. So if you don't want somebody micromanaging your life, if you don't want somebody telling you what you can and cannot do, what you can and cannot have, what you can and cannot put in your own body, any of these things, why do you feel the right to be able to tell somebody else the exact opposite? You know, and most people I encounter, if I get to that point with them, the ones that do have critical thinking skills will start to think about it. The other ones just reject it on its face because they've been convinced that the law is good. So if it's the law, it must have to do with morality. And if somebody like me is questioning those laws and saying they don't need to be there or this doesn't need to be banned, well, I must be the crazy one because they know better, because they believe in the system. It's a tough road to go down with these people. But that's where I try to bring it to with them and ask them, you know, how would you feel? You know, if your favorite substance was suddenly banned, and if they say it's ridiculous, well, just look through history. It happens all the time. It's legal one day, illegal the next, and just like that, you know. So it's not too hard to connect the dots. You just have to be willing to look.
So Dave, any closing remarks on the drug war?
I've stated various times my feelings on it. It creates a welfare class for the DEA. It creates a welfare class for the prisoners. It creates a welfare class for the police unions. It creates a welfare class for the private prisons. It creates a welfare class for the prison guards. That's all created by one edict by one man in 1970 who was paid off by fascistic corporations to do so. So if you think that's moral and legitimate, then I would then think it would be also moral and legitimate for you to go swimming in the ocean forever. Just go find Atlantis. Go find Atlantis for human society.
But
you know?
Dave, suicide's illegal, though.
Hey, they're just exercising. They exercise to death. I don't know. If you feel like your neighbors or your fellow humans shouldn't be doing something, in any case, if you're not willing to do that to stop them by force yourself, then you're an absolute coward for wanting someone else to do it for you, and you should really not exist on the planet. But I'm kind of a means to the ends on that subject. I hate welfare. I hate legislation that creates welfare. And I also hate fascism. So there's a big three-way problem here happening. So it's...
Dave's just not happy.
If you think that government... if you think that the people wanted the drug laws, you're absolutely insane.
Huh. Cynthia, any closing remarks on the drug war?
The drug war is a war on us. There is no war on drugs. You can't tell people what they can and can't do. You can't have some authority that has been deemed authority by some magical entity tell people what they can and can't do. You know, people have to make their own decisions, and people have to go through things in life, and you can't prevent everybody from hurting themselves. You can't prevent everybody from dying. Life is going to happen. Nature is going to take its course. If somebody's going to OD, they're going to OD. Sorry that your family member died, but coming up with the law against somebody using heroin or somebody using this isn't going to prevent anybody else from dying. There's going to be people that die from heroin overdose. So all these, I guess, war on drug laws have just created more criminals. And, you know, the longer they drag this out, the more criminals they're going to come up with, and, you know, the more they're going to perpetuate the prison slavery and stuff like that. So the war on drugs is a total bust.
Like, who's worse? The Jack smoking a joint on his front porch or shooting up heroin on his front porch, or the guy putting people in cages for doing something that he doesn't approve of? Who's worse? What? Seriously? Yeah. That's so fucking stupid.
It is. People don't connect it.
What you said. It's not a war on drugs. It's a war on people. I guess, yeah. More specifically, war on addicted people, most often. I was listening to a Gabor Mate interview with Stefan Molyneux, and he's an excellent, a researcher on this topic, and basically saying how many of the people who lead lives of addiction, it doesn't really matter what they're addicted to, you know, it could be gambling, could be hallucinogens, could be cocaine, could be heroin, could be sex, could be work, could be anything. It's just when you have an addictive personality, you have basically already started life at a deficiency. You know, you are an incomplete human, right, spiritually. And what produces incomplete humans is most often authoritative parenting, right? Corporal punishment, right? the kind of punishment that prepares a child for the obedience and compliance that is rewarded in government schools. So it's not a war on drugs. It's a war on people, because when you arrest the person goes to jail, not the weed, right? So
exactly.
It's always the war on addicted people, and it's quite unfortunate that its foundation is rooted in statism, right? Status type authoritative parenting, which is why it was so important for those that have kids to raise their children peacefully and rationally, logically, and raise them to have principles and to learn morality. You know, your child begins to feel empathy and is able to reason for themselves. What more do you expect of a person? Just to have reason and able to think for themselves, which unfortunately is not encouraged in government schools, right? It's like, you know, you go to school, you get told this is what you have to do. These are the instructions. This is how you play. You don't play like that. You play like this. So yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Cynthia. It was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you guys for having me. This was awesome. This was better than I imagined.
Beautiful. So you're going to have to start your own fan page after this, because you're going to have so many people wanting to talk to you.
And I didn't even have to flash anybody. Oh my God. Like, I thought I was going to have
to. I expect to see Cynthia Wells' anarchist extraordinaire Facebook page when we get off.
Oh, I know. And I'm going to be like, nigga, we made it.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you very much for the conversation. So if anybody wants to donate, we accept Bitcoin, PayPal, right? So far, just those two, right?
No, we canceled PayPal. We have a Patreon PayPal, right? Now. Oh, Patreon.com/SeedsOfLiberty. I'm going to be updating it soon. But if you really want to help us out, you can always just take a little picture with your Bitcoin app of our QR code and send us as much Bitcoin as you want, or go on to Patreon and sign up and send us $1 a month. If 1,000 people do that, that would be great.
Awesome.
So, yep.
helps us keep the lights
on. And also the Amazon link through on our webpage.
Yeah, all that can be found in the description box. Help us keep the lights on. You see Dave's already without lights, so we need all the help we can get.
They barely stay on.
So anything you can throw at us is very much appreciated. So thank you very much. This is the Seeds of Liberty podcast.
Well, actually, you don't even have to donate to us. All you have to do is like, comment, share anything you see from us. That is the best thing you could do.
Those are free ways to help us out. So yeah, there are many ways definitely to improve the lives of you and your neighbors and our grandchildren and future generations. So thank you very much. This is the Seeds of Liberty podcast. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care.
Bye.